Are you ready?
Welcome everybody to Wrestling with the War!
That's right, folks. It's your boy, BC, back for another episode of Wrestling with the War. Here to talk about the Monday Night War between WWF and WCW. Just coming off our latest episode, which was looking at In Your House 5 Season Beatings, which was an interesting pay-per-view, but I was glad to have a special guest along for that episode. It was Taylor from Jaded Wrestling. Fantastic podcast. If you're not already subscribed to him, make sure you get over onto Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and follow Jaded Wrestling because it is a great show, and Taylor's got a great mind for the business itself. I think our take on the pay-per-view was that we enjoyed it. Maybe it wasn't full of great matches, but we were able to have some good times and some good laughs while talking about it. Taylor, for sure, got to mention about his love of chubby guys and lack of hillbillies that we have in the wrestling industry at this time. But you know what? There is still one hillbilly around, and man, I'm telling you, if you are not aware of this hillbilly, you really should make sure you are, because Ted the Hillbilly Heel is one of the best podcasters out there at this time. He has a love for old school wrestling like no other, loves to talk about the mid-80s Jim Crockett promotions, and his podcast, The Heel Truth, is an amazing show. And I got to give a shout out to Ted for a couple of different reasons. For one, he's given some five-star reviews on the last couple of episodes, which I really appreciate. And also, Ted joined me over on my YouTube channel, Wrestling with the 80s, which if you haven't already subscribed to, please, folks, please go on over and give that a subscribe and check out the newest video where Ted joins me, where we talk about the what if Magnum TA's accident, auto accident, hadn't happened. And we go into all the rabbit holes of what could have happened if Magnum hadn't had that accident. Would he have gotten the NWA World Heavyweight title at Starrcade 86? How would that affect people like Sting, like Flair, like Tully Blanchard, Nikita, all those different folks? We had an amazing time talking about this subject. We're both marks, let's say it, for that era of wrestling, Jim Crockett Promotions, and just how great that wrestling was at the time. So a great conversation. The video, I got to say thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who's been watching it, subscribing. Our channel has just taken off because of this. It's just phenomenal how people have reacted to it. So really appreciate it, and got lots of suggestions for some other what ifs, further what ifs that we could do in the future. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. So lots of things on the horizon. So go on over to Wrestling with the 80s on YouTube. Check it out. Subscribe. Make sure you're there. And also, while you're on YouTube, why don't you head on over to Wrestling with the Truth as well on that channel, because we're talking a little bit more modern wrestling. On Wrestling with the Truth, looking at today's product, having a little fun over there. I actually had my wife join me on the last two videos that were posted. It's a segment called Wrestling with the Wife, and we did a game show called Name That Wrestler. And we had previously done one on Name the Wrestlers from the 1980s, which she smoked. I got to say, I was impressed with her performance on that. I think she got 23 out of 30 right. And this time we're looking at wrestlers from the 90s, a bit more of a difficult task. She's more of an old school fan than she is of a new school or even that 90s era wrestling, but we'll see how she did if you want to go over there and check it out. But I appreciate subscribing to that channel as well. All right, so let's get into this episode. I won't keep it as long as I know I'm a little bit delayed on getting the episode out, so I appreciate your patience with it. But we're going to be talking about just the Nitro from December 18th and the Nitro from December 25th. And we're going to be talking the Raw from December 18th, because Raw did not put an episode on Christmas Day this particular year in 1995. So Nitro ran unopposed once again. And, you know, as I've been saying all along, right now, Nitro is kicking Raw's butt. I'm not sure if they're kicking them in the ratings situation at this point, but as far as the quality of the show, it's a much more enjoyable show with our friends over at Nitro. So let's get right into it with the December 18th episode of Nitro. As you know, we are leading up to Starrcade 95, where it's going to be based around a challenge between the United States and WCW versus New Japan Pro Wrestling. So interesting way to go with this, as well as we've got Macho Man Savage going to be defending his World Heavyweight title against the winner of a triangle match between Flair, Luger, and Sting. December 18th, 1995, if you're a wrestling fan of the Monday Night War, this was a pivotal episode in this war, because this is the episode where Medusa Michelli shows up at the beginning of the episode with the WWF women's title that she had won as Alundra Blaze in the WWF, and proceeds to cut a scathing promo on WWF, and then drops the women's title in the trash can, which was mind-blowing at the time. If you were there watching this live as a fan, you couldn't believe, number one, this person shows up on the show. You thought she was signed to WWF, couldn't believe this. But then, two, she has the promotion's title with her and throws it in a trash can. I think in later interviews, Medusa mentioned that maybe she felt bad about doing that after all, but felt like it was something that Eric Bischoff wanted her to do to promote WCW and to cause a stir. And boy, did it ever. And, you know, people talk about the whole situation with Bret Hart. I won't go too deep into that, but him wanting to not lose at Survivor Series 97 and then proceed to drop the title at the Raw the following night, but he was under contract. And one of the arguments that was made was that Vince, because of this incident with Medusa, was very worried about Bret doing the same thing, taking the WWF world title onto Monday Nitro and doing whatever with it, whether it was drop it in the trash as well or something. But he'd been burned by this situation, ironically enough, by a wrestler named Blaze. But he did get burned in this situation. And I think that really made him scared to have that happen again. The other thing about this is people wonder, was it the NWO that kicked off the whole wake up for WWF and they realized, okay, we got to change our programming? Was it the Bret Hart situation? I don't know. I'm starting to think that this may have been the situation where Vince finally said, okay, the gloves are off. We got to do something. And of course, it doesn't happen overnight. You don't just turn the page and just say, okay, we're going nuts and we're going adult content right off the get-go, and we're going to change the tide of this whole situation. But I do think this is a situation that got Vince's attention, not necessarily because of Medusa going over to WCW, but the fact that his title, which, let's be honest, had been ignored and forgotten about by WWF, was now on WCW TV and was being disrespected and dropped in a trash can. And I think that might have been the thing that finally woke Vince up, because very shortly in 96, we're going to see the signing of Vader coming over. We're going to see the signing of Steve Austin. Of course, it's not the Stone Cold character at that point, but still, there's some new blood coming in, some real good workers, some physical people, and you're going to see a change in the dynamic, because 95 WWF was not a good year for them, I got to say. So we're seeing that, we're going to see that changeover very shortly. And I'm going to get rewarded for slogging through these early episodes of WWF in 95. WCW has been enjoyable to watch. But and speaking of that, let's get into the episode. So, I mean, one thing I will say about crowds for WCW shows, they were jacked. They were into it. They were wild. They were excited. They were enjoying themselves. Compared to WWF, the crowd just seemed a little bit dead. That made a big difference in the show. The feel of the show just feels exciting. It feels frantic. It feels like it's moving fast and quick paced. And that's what you need in a wrestling product. That's one of the problems and complaints I have about the WWE shows at this time, because it just feels like everything's moving at turtle pace sometimes on Raw or on SmackDown. Not as bad because they have less time to kill, but you know, on Raw just feels like that. But anyways, I digress. That's a modern product and we won't go there, but quickly run through the show. I mean, again, you kick it off with this whole Medusa incident, which they talked about throughout the show, and why the heck not? And then you go right away into a match between Ric Flair and Eddie Guerrero. And of course, you know, we look back fondly on Eddie and think about Eddie as the Eddie from, you know, WWE, who was the champion. He was the lie, cheat, and steal Eddie. He was just one of the greatest of all time. But remember, this is early in the Eddie Guerrero lifespan. But as you're watching him, you can tell he's going to be a star. And it's just, and the way they're pushing him too, they felt that he was going to be a star as well. And I'll say one thing, Ric Flair was not afraid to sell for Eddie in this match. He made Eddie look good. in the end, Eddie screws up, goes for a dive onto the outside, onto Flair on the outside, and misses. Ends up hurting his knee. It was selling his knee, which was the perfect opening for Flair to lock on that figure four. But I'll tell you, Eddie did not just give up right away. He fought that for quite a while, and they even had him pass out. And that's where Flair ends up getting the win through the pin from Eddie passing out. They protected Eddie big time. Flair made him look great as well. This is what Flair is good at. He can take somebody and make them look like $1 million. And for every detractor of Flair at the time, they did the same thing, or it was chop woo, figure four. This is what Flair's really good at, is just making a star out of people. And that's what it looked like in this match. And the fans were really into Eddie. So great stuff. Right after that, Arn jumps in the ring for an interview with Mean Gene and Ric Flair, and they just talk about the tear the Horseman's been on. Kevin Sullivan and Jimmy Hart come out, and they interrupt, and they're talking about Pillman being a bit of a loose cannon, which is ironic because that's what he becomes in his gimmick in the ECW and in WWE. But Kevin's not too happy about Pillman bringing his name up in his little rant that he went on the previous week on Nitro. And Arn, originally, who's friends with Kevin Sullivan, is trying to play it off, but he eventually hints around that if you got a problem with Pillman, you got a problem with the Horseman. So watch it, Sullivan. If you're familiar with this time period from WCW, there's a lot of interesting things coming along with Pillman and Sullivan. After that, we get to the announce desk, and Sergeant Craig Pittman comes out and interrupts, and he asked Bobby Heenan to be his manager, which is, it was an interesting segment, a weird segment, but hey, we're off to a hot start. There's a lot going on here. You had Medusa, you have Flair Guerrero, you have Arn and Sullivan, you have Pittman, and we're only like 15 minutes into the show, so there is stuff going on. After that, it was Lex Luger versus Marcus Bagwell, and my favorite part of every episode of Nitro, the awkward high five between Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger, and they did it again. Lex puts up two hands for the high five, and Jimmy managed to do one with the megaphone in his hand, and just it looked rather weird, as they do. They're just awkward, but quick match. Lex wins with the torture rack, as he should. They're building up Lex to be a monster at this point, and he does look like a monster. After that, it's Mean Gene interviewing Lex and Jimmy on the ramp. And then from there, we have Sting versus Earl Robert Eaton. Oh, boy. Poor old Bobby Eaton. This was an interesting time period for him, where he's tag team with Lord Stephen Regal. And you'd think that would be an amazing team, but they became kind of jobbers at that point, and Eaton just seemed lost in this character. But in the ring, you can't hide the smoothness of Bobby Eaton. He was just so good in the ring. Throughout the match, basically the announcers were touching on the whole dissension angle with Sting, Macho, Hogan, his relationship with Luger. It wasn't about the match itself. It was just building up this whole dissension thing and building up the dissension as far as the match itself, the triangle match at Starrcade between Flair, Luger, and Sting, and how that's going to affect it. From there, we've got our main event, which is the Giant versus Randy Macho Man Savage, who is the WCW World Heavyweight Champion at this time. As expected, with a Giant match, it's a bit of a slow-moving match, but the fans were into it. And, you know, the Giant, he was showing some athleticism in this match. He went for a top rope splash, which he ended up missing. Savage hits a huge flying elbow for a two count, which a little recall from Savage on the kick out, as he did the kind of the same move that he did when Yokozuna won the Royal Rumble, where from the pin, Yoko pushed him over the top ropes, and the Giant did the same thing. I mentioned during last week's episode about how Earl Hebner is more like Earl Edwards with the histrionics and getting involved in the match and kind of taken away from the match a little bit. Well, I'm going to say, as far as WCW's version of Aubrey, it's Randy Anderson. Randy Anderson, I know, he's a respected Hall of Fame referee, but he was a lot of unnecessary stuff that was going on, including getting in the way of Savage on a move from the Giant from the outside. And it just, I don't know. I don't like having the referees be in the center of attention in the match. I just want to see the wrestlers do that, right? It's better off when they're heard, not seen. So we're back in the ring. It looks like after a Giant choke slam that he's going to win the title. But lo and behold, who comes in the ring to interfere? It's Hulk Hogan. Comes from the back, breaks up a three count with a chair, then goes nuts with the chair on the Giant, chases him to the back, although the Giant's being held back like a wild man to get back at Hogan. Savage is DQ'd. I'm not sure what the thought process was on this, because it was just a heel move. Let's be honest with you. Hogan was a heel here. Savage looks like a heel because he has his buddy come in and save his title. Looked like an Iron Flair situation. So interesting booking. Mean Gene jumps in the ring afterwards to see what the heck's going on. And Savage and Hogan are going off. The Giant comes back out being trying to get back in the ring. And Hogan runs back down and destroys him with the chair once again. And then Hogan and Savage talk about Starrcade and how if Savage does come out of Starrcade the champion, Hogan wants to be the next opponent. So again, his best friend, let's challenge him for the title. Let's be a heel. Crazy stuff. But that's Hogan in WCW right now. He's you can tell he's leaning towards those heel tendencies, which we're going to see come up later on in 1996. But all I can say about this episode, wow, it was action-packed. There was a lot going on. There was a lot squished into an hour-long show, but it didn't feel rushed or hurried or anything like that. It just felt like it was nonstop, wall-to-wall action, which, hey, I'm cool with that. So good stuff from WCW. Now, what did WWF do as their counter to that? Well, of course, this is the follow-up show to this In Your House 5 season beatings pay-per-view. And it's the last show of 95, as I mentioned, as there was no Christmas show. And that's a rarity for WWF. They usually will put a show on December 25th. But it started out with the returning Jeff Jarrett against Fatu. And interesting note on Fatu's entrance, as he's walking down the aisle, he looks into the camera and does a West Coast for Life. And at the time, does a hand signal that looks exactly like what the NWO did for their For Life hand signal. So can we credit Fatu with the creation of the NWO For Life hand signal? I don't know. We'll have to look into that. I wonder if he trademarked that or if it was Hogan was sly enough to get that away from him. But anyways, that's pretty much it. We can talk about this match. It was a competitive one right up until the end of the match when Ahmed Johnson comes in and jumps Jarrett to cause a DQ. So yeah, again, babyface coming in, interfering in the match, and the heel is the one that gets the win, which really there was nothing heelish done by Jarrett in this match. So interesting booking once again. From there, we go to Doc Hendricks talking with Gorilla Monsoon about Royal Rumble. Gorilla mentions that Double J is not in the Rumble. He's, even though he did mention that at In Your House 5, that he was qualifying for the Rumble, but instead he's going to have to face the aforementioned Ahmed Johnson in one match. And then Gorilla just teases that there's going to be a lot of surprise entrants in the Rumble. So we'll see if maybe we have some new blood showing up at Royal Rumble. After that, it's a Gold Dust promo on Razor Ramon. And it's very innuendo laced, I'll say that. And better than his In Your House promo. It feels like week after week after week, it seems like Gold Dust is getting more and more comfortable in this character and more comfortable of what it wants to portray with this character and on the mic. So this was actually a pretty decent promo from Gold Dust in regards to Razor. We get a replay of Diesel and Taker's confrontation from In Your House, which is going to be foreshadowing the future feud between these guys. And then from there, we go to Bob Sparkplug Holly, I should say, against Buddy Landell, who we talked about in our last episode. And poor old Buddy, man. Ugh, I feel so bad for him. Buddy Landell, if it wasn't for bad luck, it'd be no luck. He was destined to win the NWA World's title from Ric Flair back in the mid-80s. Unfortunately, he let the press clippings and maybe some out-of-the-ring activities get in the way of that and ended up getting fired from his position before he could win that. Comes back in 86. It looks like he's going to do another run with Flair and again ends up getting fired at that time. He's back here, he's debuting in WWF at the In Your House pay-per-view, and this is his first match on Raw, and he has a great match with Bob Holly. Buddy is just a great worker, very smooth. His physique didn't look the same now here in 95 as it did back in the 80s. He's in much better shape, but still, his Flair copy gimmick kind of was felt a little old school at this point compared to what we were doing in 95, but he is smooth as anything in that ring. He can sell very well. We saw an interesting move from Bob Holly in this match. It was a Frankensteiner, and he pulled it off very well. And this is the early days of people using the Frankensteiner. And it was Buddy that gets the win with a corkscrew elbow drop, which I was surprised by. But it looks like they were actually going to go for a push with Buddy Landel. But unfortunately, shortly after this match, he ends up slipping outside the arena and tears his quad on his leg, and he is injured. And that's pretty much the end of Buddy Landel's run pretty much anywheres. He came back a couple of times for WWF, but never got any push at the time. But rumor has it that Vince McMahon was kind of high on Buddy, and he wanted to do a little bit of a run with him. Now, what that would have led to, I don't know. Would have been a mid-card title? Who knows? But it's unfortunate. Just, again, it seems like if it wasn't for bad luck, it'd be no luck for Mr. Landel. But there's a good what if for a future episode on Wrestling with the 80s over on YouTube, which go and subscribe if you haven't already. Okay, so next we have Brother Love back in the ring, and he's got Ted DiBiase in the ring with him talking about his newest acquisition, Santa Claus, the evil brother of Santa Claus from the North Pole, and how he feels that he's going to be a top star in the WWF and within the Million Dollar Corporation. And again, I question Mr. DiBiase's his investment choices and his investment portfolio, but hey, he is the Million Dollar Man. He's just going to fire money wherever. But yeah, I think that poor decisions around investing has carried over up into real life, if you've been watching the news lately as well. The other thing that was of note in this promo was that he teased that he's going to have a new Million Dollar Champion in 1996. And we all know who that Million Dollar Champion is going to be. It's none other than Stone Cold Steve Austin. So stay tuned for that. After that, we have Razor Ramon versus Yokozuna for the Intercontinental title. To begin the match, Goldust comes out with his usher and sits in the director's chair. Razor, of course, always puts on a great match. Yoko, for his size, and I mean, he has ballooned to epic proportions at this point, but for his size, he can still move unbelievable for that size. It doesn't even make sense, but he just a talented guy. I just wish he hadn't let his weight get so out of control, because it would have been nice to see him have a longer career and a longer life, to be honest with you. So throughout the start of the match, it was Goldust playing mind games. He even had his gold lighting and his gold, I don't know what you want to call it, sparkles or whatever, coming down from the ceiling and to throw Razor off. Decent match. At the end, it's Undertaker coming out with a casket from last night's event that he used for Mabel and Mo, teasing another matchup with Yoko. And Yoko bails out and runs away, showing his fear for the Undertaker. So I guess that's what we're looking at for a future match, is Yokozuna against Undertaker. I'm not even sure if we got that, because shortly after that, Yoko was, I think, off to the weight loss clinic to try to save his life. But yeah. After that, Doc Hendricks gets Razor and pulls him aside on his way back to the dressing room, and he asks about Goldust's letter, and that's the one that he was handed on the December 18th episode of Raw. And Razor mentions that, hey, Goldust, he thinks I'm hot, thinks I'm handsome. You know, he says, hey, Chico, you're right, but I don't play that. And so Razor, he only likes the women. So he tells Goldust to do his thing, man, but not going to do it with him. So again, he asks, Doc is pushing on him, okay, well, what's the contents of the letter and all this stuff? But Razor says that this is a family show, and he'll tell him about it back in the dressing room. So there you go. It's not for the kiddies, apparently, what was written in that letters. We can only imagine what was going on, but we know Razor wasn't too comfortable with this angle all along. He didn't like the whole idea of Goldust and his innuendos and stuff. But yeah, we'll see where this goes from here. After that, we finish off with a tribute video to Shawn Michaels that basically sounds like The Wind Beneath My Wings. And I mean, they're going for the tearjerker here. Shawn's career is over. My God, it's just, it's horrible. It's the worst thing possible. And it's just WWE dramatics or WWF dramatics at the time. But old Shawn, the last scene is him just walking out with that colorful Palo jacket that he had. Anyways, wonder if Sean's gonna make it back. Boy, I don't think we're gonna see him again. We'll have to see what happens here. I guess he won't be able to compete in that Royal Rumble. Yeah, foreshadowing for sure. Hey folks, it's BC here. I want to say thank you for supporting Wrestling with the War. I really appreciate you tuning into this episode. If you're looking for some more fantastic podcasts to listen to once you're done with this one, why don't you check out these great content creators we are proud to call friends of the show. If you head on over to either Twitch or YouTube, check out Botch Spotch and Chair Shots, as Will and Allison do some great interviews with independent wrestlers, host fun quiz shows, and have lots of hot takes on wrestling in general. Also on Twitch and YouTube is the Smacked Raw podcast. Kyle and RN give reviews and opinions on the modern wrestling product and have a lot of fun along the way. And then finally, if you head over to your favorite audio podcasting apps, Mr. Gentleman's Lifestyle podcast with Ken, aka Mr. Gentleman, talks personal stories, inspirational content, and interviews amazing guests. Thanks again. I hope you enjoy all of these selections. Okay, and now we're going to finish up with the Christmas Day episode of Monday Nitro. Leading up to 2 days later was going to be Starrcade 95. So this one, again, is running unopposed because Raw was not presenting a show on Christmas Day. And it starts off with old Lex Luger against the other half of the American Male, Scotty Riggs. And honestly, this was an interesting start to the show because, number one, the high five wasn't awkward this week. I was kind of disappointed. They actually, Jimmy and Lex pulled it off very well this week. So nothing to laugh about there. And then a surprising amount of offense from Scotty Riggs in this match. He looked great. Got a lot of offense on Lex. Lex finally takes over towards the end, finished him off with the torture rack. And I got to say, the fans were hugely behind Lex. And that torture rack, that was over, man. When he put him up there, the fans went crazy. So, wow. I mean, they could have easily went with Lex at this point, winning the title. And I think the fans would have been pretty happy about it. But that comes a little later on. Yeah, but Lex at this point, he was running on all cylinders. It was great to see. Throughout the match, of course, again, the announcers hinting towards a Sting heel turn. So this is all setting the stage for what leads to eventually Sting turning his back on WCW, leading to the Crow Sting, all that stuff, because everybody lost faith in him and thought he was turning bad. So we're setting the groundwork early here. This is you know, end of 95. We're still, I think it's July or August when Sting finally stops talking and turns his back on WCW. So good job laying the groundwork for it right now. After that, Mean Gene interviews Sting on the ramp, talks about his friendship with Luger, and Sting is fed up with the questions. That's enough. He's tired of it. He's going to fight Luger if he has to fight Luger. If the title's on the line, he's going to beat Luger. He's going to defend the title against Luger. He doesn't care. He's his friend, but he's still his foe. So great. Actually, it's a great promo from Sting. Lots of fire here. I miss Surfer Sting because, you know, he was so fired up at this time versus the Crow Sting, where it was all quiet, not saying anything. But it's good to have him at this point doing his stuff. And he's pretty over at this point as well. After that, he has a match with Big Bubba. And interesting, Sting even walked down the aisle, seemed a little bit confused by the lighting. They had scorpions lit up on the ground as he's walking. He kind of stopped to to go, what the heck's going on here? He also was a little bit confused by the pyro he got. He was like, all right, boys, enough of the pyro. So Sting maybe is worried about the budget for WCW. I don't know. Maybe that's the problem. But again, we have a match where the person you expect not to carry a lot of offense did, as Big Bubba got a lot of offense in on Sting. Good back and forth match. What's really amazing to me is the drop off for Bubba after, as far as status after leaving the WWF. If you think about back when he was the Big Boss Man in WWF, that guy was on the main event scene as a heel and remained there top level as a babyface. Never won any titles, but he was just up there as far as one of your key guys back in the day, back in the early 90s. And to see him drop off so drastically when he went to WCW, I don't know why or why that happened, because the guy was in great shape at this point. He can move. His offense was always believable. He's like 6'5", 6'6", or something like that, 320, and the guy's moving in there like a lightweight. It's a mystery why it was that Bubba just kind of fell off the cliff that way. But again, good match between the two. Sting gets a small package from the top rope. And honestly, I've never seen that before. He's up in the top rope. Bubba cuts him off, about to do a power slam from the top. Sting cradles on the way down and turns it into a small package. It's an interesting way to finish a match. Again, I haven't seen that before. A little bit of a mess up as far as the way it went, but it's cool to see that kind of offense. It's something I'd like to see in a match now in these days. It'd be believable that they could get the win that way. So we go up to the ramp with Mean Gene, and he's there with Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger, and they have a short conversation before Sergeant Craig Pittman comes out to interrupt the interview. And this time he's asking Jimmy Hart to be his manager. He's on the lookout for a good manager. Got refused by Bobby Heenan because Heenan was retired, of course, and he's doing the announcing at this time. But Jimmy Hart's now his next target, and Hart basically humiliates him, asks him to take off his shirt, and then compares his body to Lex Luger and tells him basically he's not going to manage a loser like him. And then gives him a quarter and tells him to call a manager that's looking for a few good men, which was a funny line, considering Pittman's a military guy, and a few good men actually probably would have been a popular movie at that time. So pretty funny stuff. But old Pittman, I don't know who's going to end up with his manager right now. After that, we have Dean Malenko versus Mr. JL. And of course, Mr. JL being Jerry Lynn, clever nickname for him there. But great matches expected. Malenko's overhead gut buster from the top rope is insane. I still don't know how he pulled that move off without completely injuring both himself and the opponent, destroying his knee in the process. But ironically enough, there was an injury on this move, and it's Jerry Lynn legit broke his wrist on this move, because on the way down, it looked like he tried to brace his hand on the mat and jammed it, and it caused his wrist to break. You can even hear him talking to Malenko and the ref about how it was broken during the match. So Malenko basically just rolled him into a leg submission, and JL gave up immediately. So unfortunate timing on the injury, because it looked like Jerry Lynn was going to be a part of the cruiserweight division that they were loading up for. So it's just too bad, but just the way she goes, he ends up doing well with the ECW, I'll say that. We once again go to the ramp, and it's Ric Flair. And it's this time it's another interruption, as Jimmy Hart comes out to interrupt Flair, and he wants to thank Flair for saving his life basically the previous week, and then offers to pay him back by being his manager for this match, which is the upcoming main event, which is Ric Flair versus Macho Man Randy Savage for the WCW World title. And man, Savage is a busy guy. He is defending that title. He's like a Seth Rollins defending that title week after week. I feel bad for him. He should pull maybe a Roman move and try to cool off a bit, since you got Starrcade coming up in two days. But Flair accepts the offer from Jimmy Hart. And so Hart's going to be ringside for Flair during this match. So we go to the main event from there. Again, Savage Flair, just an excellent match. They work well together. I mean, they have history together with their run in WWF for the WWF World title. Here, it's just an excellent match. Just two veterans who know what to do. Flair gets DQ'd when Lex Luger interferes. Like, we couldn't see that coming a mile away when Jimmy Hart was involved. But Luger comes in, interferes after actually Randy Savage punches Jimmy Hart after a bit of interference from Hart. Sting comes in to help, but the question is, who is he helping? Because he ends up taking out Flair, doesn't touch Luger. Luger's with Savage. And then at the end of the show, you see Savage and Sting backing up to the middle of the ring, doing that old spot where they don't see each other and bang into each other, and then turn around, the fists are ready to go. And that's how we fade to black. So, which is great. I love stuff like that, where you leave the episode going, what the hell is going on at this point? But a good way to end it. You got some intrigue going into Starrcade, and it gets you looking forward to, okay, are we going to see Sting heel turn? Is Savage going to hold on to the title? Is Hogan going to get involved? Is Flair winning another title? Is Luger going to finally get the shot? Great stuff. I mean, the buildup for Starrcade overall hasn't been tremendous, because it feels like I don't really know any matches. We just know that there's going to be a challenge between WCW against New Japan in a match, and then there's going to be that triangle match, and then we got the world title match. But still, the main event, the world title situation, is so congested with so many big names and stars that I'm okay with it, because I'm excited to see that. So, yeah, it should be interesting. So next week we'll be talking Starrcade 95, hoping to have a special guest for that episode. But if not, I'll run it solo. But just got things in the works, trying to get the ink on the contract for that episode. But in the meantime, leave your thoughts on this episode of Wrestling with the War. And if you want to leave a 5-star review, I certainly would encourage that. And thank you for that, because any 5-star review that we get on the show will be read out over the air. If you do it on Spotify, I know you can only do the rating. You can't actually do any comments, but if you want, just I'm going to put a question on the episode asking, did this show earn a 5-star review? Put a comment in there and I will read it over the air. Or if you're doing Apple or Google or whatever, leave your comments, leave a review, a 5-star review. It'd be greatly appreciated. It helps us get exposed, helps us get out there. And as I say, a reminder, head on over to YouTube, subscribe to Wrestling with the Truth, subscribe to Wrestling with the 80s, check out the videos, give some feedback, have some fun, enjoy it, and support my good friend Ted the Hillbilly Heel, who participated in that latest episode. On that note, I got to get going because it looks like I'm getting the cue from the director. Got to say goodbye. We'll see you at Starrcade 95.